This is a Collider.com audio interview.
An injury with you?
It's just nothing. It's not an injury. It's just a sort of affectation.
It's a what?
An affectation.
I like that. It's a black sling.
Well, you better try. Yeah, I've completely coloured. Thank you. Completely coloured. Coordinated for all my clothes. There we go.
So can we ask actually what happened?
No. I've had a tear in the shoulder, and I think two Bond movies have just aggravated it. And during this one, it started aching really badly halfway through, and I sort of thought, you know, we would, because, you know, there was a potential actor strike, so we had a deadline. If we didn't finish, we were screwed. So I went to see a surgeon, and he just said, fine, you might damage it more, but you'll be fine, and come and see me when you got the rest. So I've had it, 6 weeks ago, I had surgery at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, and I'm on the way. It's just, I've got to keep it in this for a while.
Is Bond chipping away you piece by piece, taking
no, no.
It seemed to me in this film a lot more, not just necessarily close ones, but just things to identify you as doing the stunts yourself. And I just did you feel you did a lot more physically in this? And
you know, we learned a huge amount when we did Casino Royale. Certainly, I did. And the stunt team that I work with did, about how much I can do and how much, what's the limit. But I think we're getting better at just, you know, making it look like it's me. And we've got the guys I work with, I've got four or five guys who work really closely with me, who have got incredible skills, fighting skills, gymnasts, acrobats. And then luckily they're all kind of quite similar to me. And we just, you know, as long as I try and get as fit as they are, because they're seriously fit. And then, you know, I get my face in there, and if I can get my face in there at that key moment, and not sort of pull the audience out. That's all I want. I don't want the audience to be watching an action sequence and then suddenly for them to go, oh, it's not him. There are moments if you play it really slowly, and you know, you'll be able to find it. But hopefully, they're few and far between.
The stunts in this seemed even more dangerous than the other one, especially all the fire at the end.
That was
interesting. Was there anything that scared you, or
no, not scared. I mean. Trepidation, but you're genuinely, it's about getting it right. Because I only want to do it once. And so if you're standing on a roof and you've got to jump over, and I'm like, I don't want to do this more than once if I can help it. So that's all you're going through your head. I mean, there were moments where suddenly we were, because we rehearsed it. So, I mean, with the fire sequence, we went to a fire testing facility. And we basically went in there with fire suits on and just got as close as we could, just to sort of get ourselves used to the heat. And then you're covered in this like flame retardant, which is like gel, which is just plastered all over your body. Some points I've actually got plastic hands on, because I'm smashing through sort of things. And there's guys with fire extinguishers. You hope for the best. No, I mean it's more than that. We plot it out really, really carefully. And all I'm cared about is when we go for the takes, is that we're not doing, you know, we get the jumping out of windows. Actually, that I didn't want to do that more than once, but actually after the third time, it's actually kind of getting quite fun. So sick way that happens.
When you were a kid and you saw Bond movies, I assume you saw them when you were young. Did you, when you became Bond, did you think there's something about this I want to preserve? Like there's something about it that should change?
I did not when I was a child, but I mean certainly when we. Mark and I had a long conversation when we came to do this, and many long conversations, which we're still doing. We're big fans of the early Bonds, but also the movies that they spawned in the 60s, because they had a direct effect on movies all over. One of the biggest things the Bond movies did, the early Bond movies, is go on location. I mean, and that was unusual at the time. If it was Hollywood movies, they were shot on the back lot, and they created sets, and you know, beautifully done, but it was... Bond went. He went to Japan. He was in Japan, and that's what we wanted to make sure it happened in this movie. That the feel that you were transported to these places, and plus, sort of trying to add some of the style that they developed back then, and trying to get some of that back into the movies and the feel, because the mood of them is they're stylized. I mean, and even though there's reality in this, and everybody kind of saying, "Oh, it's grittier and harder," I think it's a very stylized Bond, and I like the fact that it sort of has a look back to that.
You were.
I'm imagining that you're going to have a little bit more pull with perhaps the next Bond film. Is there a certain place in the world that you want to go to that you haven't been that you can work into the Bond franchise?
The beach or the drink. for about an hour and 20 minutes in the movie and then 10 minutes of action. That would really, really, really do me. I was going to look up and explosions could be happening everywhere, occasionally sipping my cocktail.
but being serious, there's so many amazing places on the planet.
There are.
And I'm just curious if you as a person, if there's places in the world that you would love to...
The problem always is that because of what, you know, travel is so much easier than it has been, there are fewer places to go that people haven't been. What I think we tried to achieve in this is that we went to places which are unusual to visit and then sort of double, like Colón in Panama, we doubled for Haiti and for South America. Is to try and photograph them in the most the best way you can, there are, I don't know, I mean there's plenty. I mean I could think of 10 places I'd like to go personally. 10 places to film a Bond movie, that's a different thing because it's the logistics of that are so great. But anywhere, Africa would be great. I mean, sort of, you know, Asia would be wonderful. I'd love to go to China or Hong Kong. That would be somewhere fantastic. But
Danny, you talked before about how this movie's meant as a bookend to the first movie, but the first BBC review that came out of it, actually whoever wrote the review felt that it sort of felt more like a second in a trilogy. Is it possible that the themes of these first two movies could carry on to the third one, or do you guys really feel like the third one will be something completely...
Personally, I think that we've wrapped up all the loose ends that I wanted to wrap up, which is just the Vespa story and also solidifying the relationships, which is so important, like with Felix Leiter and with M, and sort of that, where their place in the world is. And now we've kind of got a very stable kind of Bond world now that we can just do whatever the hell we want. I find exciting. To my mind, there's no trilogy because I just... We got to do something different now. You know, we need a submarine base. I mean, let's be honest, maybe a small one, but just but you know what I mean. We need to explore. You know, there's Moneypenny, there's Q, there's all the other characters that we could conceivably bring in. My instinct has always been with those sort of things, and people have asked and said, "Well, why is there no Q? Why is there no Moneypenny?" I'm like, because you need to give them to good actors, and you can't give a good actor and say, "Remember how Moneypenny was played? Can you do that?" So they just go, "Fuck off." I mean, I'd be like, "No, I want to reinvent this character." And so that's what I'd love if we get a chance to make another one of these movies, and who knows whatever happens. And that's where I'd like to go with it. I'd like to sort of hand it on to some people with talent. That's all.
How did you like working with Mark Forster?
It was great. I'm a fan of his. I've always been a fan of his. So the idea when he came up, when he was asked to do it, I said, I've got absolutely no problem with that. Because he's a fantastic storyteller. So. Mm-hmm.
How was it different from the last one?
Is this going live?
What? No. Oh, no. This is
Jesus Christ. You were broadcasting this. Good. He's a lover of films. He's a, you know, cinephile through and through. And you look at how complex his films are, but how different his films are. And to me, that sort of strikes me as a very brave person who can sort of say, you know what, I'm not going to stick with it. I'm going to take subject matters completely at either ends of the spectrum. And when he came to do this, I met him, and within 5 minutes, because one of the things I knew, having done one, is that this is twice the length of any that movie. It's 3 months. 3 months to normally shoot one movie. I mean, of a sort of fairly regular size. This is 6 months. I mean, it's 6 months on every location. And as soon as I met him, I knew he was a brave man and that he was just up for doing it. And so I've had a great time with him.
A personal question. Mm. When somebody hurts you, can you let it go? Bond could not let it go. Can you?
He can. I think he can. I think you actually, because I think that the mistake in this movie is that he's on a vendetta. He's not. I kind of keep this whole thing about the title Quantum of Solace. It's actually what he's looking for. It's all he's looking for. He just does his job. He's not out to take revenge. He might be a little angrier than he was in the first one, but I mean that's kind of, you know, that's the actual point. The point at the end is he gets the chance to do the guy. the one guy that's actually the person who's responsible, not the bosses, not anyone, the actual guy that twisted his the love of his life. And he says no.
I just mean, do you have to get even?
No.
That's not you. Okay.
Don't believe in it. If I can help it, I don't believe in it.
Did you go into this one with more confidence? Because obviously with the first one, all the eyes of the world were on you.
Kind of. Sorry. Go on.
All eyes were on you. And I know you said, back when you were doing press for the first film, that, you kind of blocked all that out when you went to work. But,
yeah.
I mean, there's going to be obviously some pressure. The fact that the first one was a success, were you able to start this one from a point of being more confident and not even having to worry about,
this is going to sound with hindsight like I'm just making this up, but I got over that a long time ago. All of that sort of pressure of doing it was something that happened in the Bahamas about 3 weeks into shooting of Casino Royale. We had a good film. I mean, we had good crew, we had good actors, we had good director. I was like, there's nothing else we can do to make this a better situation. So all the pressure that was on, I put to bed, just completely put to bed. By the time we got to the premiere in London, people were going, "Don't you feel vindicated?" And I'm like, "I don't feel anything. I don't feel. I feel like we've got a great movie. I have no reason to turn around. I never wanted to get into a dialogue about it. So come to this one, all the same pressures were there, but in a very, very different way. I mean, we're on the back of a success, which is, thank goodness. I mean, we could have been on the back of a dud, which would just been, I can't imagine. So, there's different pressures, but there always is. It's a $200 million movie. I don't know how you could do that without thinking there's a little bit of pressure.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, if you could talk about the first time they gave you the script, and how did they present you? I'm just curious, like, behind the scenes, did someone deliver it to you? And what was your reaction the first time you're reading it? Were you just this super fan, you just talk a little bit
of this script? Was I a super fan?
Yeah, were you just reading the pages, okay, I cannot,
No, I mean, it's a much longer process than that, because the whole thing was, I've been working on this for nearly 2 years now, and so the ideas that we were putting together and the ideas we were putting towards for Paul and the whole thing were coming back and forth. So no one ever presented me with, the Queen. It was I got drafts and I read drafts and we read ideas and we looked at things, and it's a continual process. It was not like that with the first one. That was really a kind of, security guards and kind of the whole thing. No, I'm joking. But but in metaphorically speaking, it was like that. Yeah.
So this was a much more, for you, a collaborative process.
Yeah. Yeah, very much. Yeah.
I was just curious, when you're on set with a film like this, is there a lot of room for any sort of improv, or is it really a very structured environment?
It's a lot of improv. There's a lot of improv. I mean, obviously the jumps are not improvised. I'll go this way. That would really screw things up. But there's takes and you change lines. And I don't kind of look, I mean, I'm not Robert De Niro, believe me. I don't kind of go on and on and on for, take after take. But I do three or four takes and change the lines around and sort of just screw around with it as much as I possibly can. Just to loosen it up,
And how was Mark with coverage? Was he a one-camera guy? Did he have a lot of cameras and a lot of stuff?
Jesus, you should ask him about this. I don't know. No. He likes sticking to very classically with one camera, but we bring two cameras in. If we could fit it in. There's always a thing with two cameras. If you're shooting quickly and you're trying to shoot quickly, is that there's a thing about pushing yourself around the room. Is that the camera kind of starts getting in and eyelines all start going throwing out, you stick two cameras in. But with dialogue sequences, it's good to shoot it like that sometimes, because then you'll get a very continual flow. It's not that strict. I mean, I don't know a director that is, that sticks with one camera unless there's a financial issue involved.
I was working with Olga. She's like the first non-Bond girl, because you don't jump in with Olga. So.
No. Is that mine? No. She's great. I mean, we've kind of cast her as a... I was involved with the casting process, and she came in, and she just had this kind of quiet kind of, toughness about her, and also something going on, this sort of, secret she's carrying with her. And I just, you know, she kind of worked, she was sort of thrust into this, and we started training, and we started sort of getting into it, and sort of I was like, this is kind of what it's like. It's like, and she just did a great job. I think that the sort of her story kind of ties in so nicely with it. And no, they don't get into bed, but they kiss. You know.
But this is an incredible role, but it's also very all consuming because it takes so much of your time now. Are you able to do other things that you really want to do with
I've got a movie. I mean, I've done 3 movies since I did the last one. I had a little movie called Flashbacks of the Fool that came out a couple of days ago, kind of very quietly because it's a small movie, and then Defiance, which is coming out at the end of the year. So I'm just looking at scripts. I mean, it's good scripts are hard to find. You have to go looking for them. So I'll keep doing that if I can.
Can I just ask you, have you ever worked with Judy Dench before in London?
No.
And she's just magnificent.
Isn't she?
I just wondered what your relationship is like.
It's good. It's very good. It's a joy to work with her. I'm a very selfish actor. If I can work with really good actors, my job is sliced in half, at the very least sliced in half. I mean, and she comes on, she commands, and she can literally speak the phone book, and I'd listen to it. So,
you mentioned Defiance, which I believe is getting an Academy Award run at the end of the year.
It's getting a quick limited release on something like the 31st of December.
For the people who don't know, could you talk a little bit about your role in that film and what was it like working with Ed?
Great. Ed sort of presented me the script. It's a story, a very little known story set in Belarus during the Second World War about 4 brothers who organize a resistance, really, but that's against the invading German army, but also against the sort of the local population who are siding with the German army, and there's this forest which is around Belarus and Lithuania, which just goes on for miles and miles and miles, and it's still impenetrable today. And they went in there and they sort of committed acts of revenge, and then formed a society and survived 4 years and got 1,500 people out of the forest. Created schools, synagogues, factories, organized with the Russian partisans, and it's just a good story. I just, he said, showed it to me, and I said, yes, thank you, I'll get involved with that.
So who are you, though? Who are you?
One of the brothers.
And with a subject like that, was there a lot of research that you did getting ready for that? And when you're doing subject matter like that, do you treat it a little bit, your process a little different?
Not really, no. I treat everything just about the same. If there's research to be done, I'll do it. But if there's not research to be done, then I've got, I'll feel the pub.
What do you think those Tom Ford suits brought to the look of Bond?
He's a very classical modern tailor. I can't talk about tailoring. I don't know a great deal about it, but I know when you put on a good suit that it feels good. And there was something about the line he created that I think it fits with this Bond. I just personally do. He works in a very classical way, but there's always a twist, and it's kind of nice. They're subtle twists; they're not kind of flourishes.
It was fun to destroy all those things.
Fun. It's a shame. It's a sadness, really.
Thanks, everybody.
We gotta go. All right. Thank you. Take care. Bye bye. Thank you.